Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Hey, it's good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science and remind those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. In the first half hour, we have J. David Irwin. He's co-author, along with John Wu, of Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity, published by CRC Press. He's with Auburn University. He's an old-timer. He's been there since 1969, became head of the Electrical Engineering Department in 73, and has been there all this time, and he's now the Earl C. William Eminent Scholar in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Departments. And he's author or co-author of numerous publications, including 18 textbooks, and then this one, Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity. You're going to love it. And those of us who are wrestling with a question over the prosecution, the possible prosecution of Edward Snowden, the man who's released these NSA secrets and now hiding out in Hong Kong, last we heard, I want us to listen very carefully to this interview with David Irwin. About cybersecurity, and then the editorial at the end of the program, kind of formulate your own opinions and see if maybe you want to take a second view of prosecuting Snowden. USA Today is reporting that most Americans want to. And then, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here on the set, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments are the voice of reason. But right now, let's get to the telephone and dial up today's guest, Dr. David Irwin. Okay, an exciting guest we have today. We have J. David Irwin. He's the co-author, along with John Wu, of Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity, published by CRC Press. David joined Auburn University. He's an old-timer. He joined Auburn University back in 1969, became head of the Electrical Engineering Department in 73, and he served in that capacity all this time. He's now the Earl C. Williams Eminent Scholar in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department there, and we are so honored to have him. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a fascinating book. I was absolutely blown away when I saw it. It's an enormously huge book, the Bible of cybersecurity and computer networks, I would have to say, and it was an incredible work. How long did you and your co-author John Wu work on this book?
Well, John is the primary author, and he is the real expert. But John has probably spent 15 years working at this business, and he and I together spent about 4 to 4.5 years just putting this book together.
I can well imagine that. I mean, full of illustrations and notes, and it's just an incredible tome, a highly valuable piece, and so happy to have it. Now, you're modestly give John the credit, but actually, without your input, the book would be greatly diminished, and we know that. But we've covered cybersecurity many times in this program, and it's a constantly changing subject. So I presume that there's going to be updates from time to time. And I think what we ought to give the listeners, maybe get some pretty elementary here, why cybersecurity, what it involves, and why people should understand both networks and cybersecurity, how they're linked. Can you give us get us into that?
Yes, I think that's an important point. So in other words, cybersecurity basically is a collection of the defensive technologies and processes and practices that are designed basically to protect our assets. And these assets could be networks, programs, computers, and data. And the network itself, which we refer to the Internet protocols and their implementations, HTTP is the probably the most used, and almost everybody that uses the Internet is familiar with http://www, etc. But these protocols and so forth are implemented in layers in the network, and so the network essentially is the medium that essentially processes these protocols. So in other words, we use these two things together, and we because they're so interrelated, we have to consider both of them at the same time. In other words, we work with both of them because they are so connected. It's not feasible and not smart to talk about one without the other.
Well, we're constantly warned about cybersecurity, and as I say, this has been a burning subject on this program now for the past several years. We keep coming back to it because there's so much going on. There was a summit meeting in California recently with the chairman of the Communist Party in China, and President Obama talking about what we can do to protect us from cybersecurity. But actually, the United States is one of the maybe the biggest cyber pirates, if we want to call it that, of anywhere out there. So this cybersecurity, let's get in plain simple terms. What does the security protect us from?
Well, what it basically, in the simplest terms, what cybersecurity does is it tries to protect us from unauthorized access and damage to our assets, our networks, our computers, and that sort of thing. And the potential for damage is absolutely enormous. I mean, you can go out and buy these what's called crimeware toolkits that are very sophisticated, that can infect and propagate and even hibernate and even morph into a different form. For example, one of the ones that is the most common right now and one that is just deadly is the one called Zeus. And what this thing does is it captures the user's credentials for things like banking and shopping and affects smartphones, and Microsoft believes that this Zeus worm or whatnot, as it's called, has infected probably 13 million computers worldwide. So this is a very the malware is big business, and it has devastating consequences. And I can give you a number of examples if you like to kind of give you an idea of just exactly the range of from soup to nuts of all the things that these things can do.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it. Let's drill down a little bit. Give us a litany here. What have you got?
Well, for example, one of the methods that you use is what's something called spear phishing. And phishing now is that term is spelled as phishing to contrast it with somebody going out with a rod and reel. But the idea is that spear phishing is basically a fraudulent email that targets a specific person or organization, and what it's doing is it's seeking unauthorized access to their confidential data. Example, our FBI director Mueller was fooled by a forged bank that asked him to verify his personal information, and he did. So this was a forced operation, and he was fooled by this thing himself. Another one that I try to outline some ones that are individual, and then I'll step it up a notch to organizations and even the countries. Another one that was kind of interesting was on the Air Force base on Guam, which is out in the Northern Marianas, was going to do an operational readiness exercise, and so they decided they would see how these airmen there on the base would respond to a phishing email. So what they did was, and of course, in all of these things, what you do is you send out something that sounds really inviting. So that's how they trap you in this thing. So what they did was they sent out this email that said that this science fiction group, Transformers 3, was going to be filming on Guam, and would anybody be interested in being a part of this shoot? And a whole bunch of airmen out there responded with all their personal data and so forth and sent this information around. It even reached other Transformer 3 sites. Finally, the local media got a hold of it and came to the base and asked for all the information to find out what's happening. And of course, the base commander had to tell me, this was a This was a readiness exercise. We were just trying to find out what's going on. Last month, and I've been talking about some of these things are so up to date, it's scary. Last month, PayPal had to close a critical security hole that allowed attackers to access their users' credentials. In addition to that, what we just found out not too long ago, too, is the Wall Street Journal reported just last year that it took 10 years to figure out that 7 passwords for Nortel executives had been hacked. Now, I guess the people that hacked these things sat there and were watching the conversation going back and forth between these executives and probably would be able to get information then that could be used for stock transactions or whatever. So that kind of gives you an idea of what happens on a sort of a personal level. But if you move that, step that up one notch to a large business or whatnot, there is RSA, which is a well-known worldwide security organization, has what they call a two-factor authentication program. It's called RSA Secure ID, and what it does is it provides a one-time password plus a user password. So in other words, that's why they call it two-factor authentication, in order to be able to access data and so forth. Well, it turns out that the seeds for deriving this one-time password were stolen, and that information was then used to attack Lockheed Martin. Now, we all know that Lockheed Martin is a very, very large defense contractor.
Yeah.
So once you're into that organization,
of course,
do you have access to plans for weapon systems or this kind of thing, that sort of thing? So it's incredible. And RSA then had to fix that problem. And they said that when they estimated that the cost of fixing that problem was about $66 million.
No.
Now, you want to step that up one more notch and say, okay, now let's look at another one that happened just recently. Most people will probably remember on the news there was this thing called the Stuxnet worm that had infected the centrifuges in Iran that are being spinning over there to process the uranium for generating a bomb.
I was going to ask you about that.
What happened there is these big, large industrial complexes like nuclear plants or power plants or chemical cracking plants or whatnot use this, what's called Siemens Corporation developed this industrial software that runs what's called SCADA systems. And SCADA is S-C-A-D-A, and it stands for System Control and Data Acquisition. So it's the software that is used to run these very, very large critical infrastructure type things and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to believe that facility in Iran was protected as best they could possibly imagine.
Of course, yeah.
And yet, that Stuxnet worm got in, infected those centrifuges, and created a mess for them, and probably set back their program for months or maybe even years. I would have no idea, of course. So, I mean, this gives you an idea of how these things operate, and it's the stuff is almost insidious. It's incredible, because the way this stuff works is that they come in and what's called sometimes in what we might refer to as a zero-day attack. And what they mean by a zero-day attack is it means that you have no warning that this thing is coming. It's a hole in the security system.
Okay.
Your adversary has found it before you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they attack it, bang, they're in. It's too late. It's too late for you to protect it. You can't do that. So now what you have to do is figure out, by examining your system, what is the damage that has occurred. So that they can get into these things, and it's just amazing what they can do, because a lot of these things are a very slow, low profile, very patient attack that may take weeks, months, maybe longer and so forth. They can even hibernate and wait until exactly the right moment to strike. So this is you can just imagine that this creates a tremendous problem.
Oh yeah.
And for example, the very, as I was indicating, these things are just changing. This business is changing daily.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just last week that the Kaspersky Labs found out that there is a new polymorphic code that attacks androids.
Oh.
And this thing installs itself and hides to avoid detection, and then is activated when the phone finds the internet.
Oh,
so this stuff is occurring daily. The number of attacks is just almost unbelievable. It's exponential. In other words, it goes up so fast, not linear. It just goes straight up almost. And another issue that I want to bring up, because I think it's really important,
okay,
is that in view of all of this, you can buy these crimeware toolkits and so forth that on the black market that mm-hmm. affects people. This is a real big business. It just seems to go on and on, and people are continuously looking for how do you avoid this. It's like a cat and mouse game. You know, the good guys are trying to block it, the bad guys are trying to get in.
Yeah.
They find a way in, and the good guys have got to patch the hole. And so forth. It goes on and on. And I was talking to a guy that I know not too long ago who was saying that, their company, and I won't name it, but he says their company was interested in looking into some techniques that would avoid the use of your, you know, your the normal things that people are using. And so what they were thinking about is they were thinking about using fingerprints. They said, you know, everybody's got a fingerprint. Instead of using a password, we're trying to get away from passwords. Why don't we do this? We'll try and use a fingerprint because everybody's got a unique fingerprint. Well, John Wu realized just the other day, found an article that the Japanese have figured out a way to clone fingerprints using a printed circuit board and Play-Doh, of all things.
Oh, wow.
And there's another website out there that says that tells you how to fool a fingerprint security system.
Oh, jeez.
So you begin to realize real quickly that there is no silver bullet in this business, that you just have to be so very, very careful. There's just no way to get around that. Whatever you can think of, somebody can figure out a way to get around it. So it's a very, very serious game. I'm afraid people think of it that way, but I'm afraid that's what it is.
Well, I'm going to want to get back to that in a minute, but right at the moment, I'd like to talk to you some more about that Stuxnet thing. Initially, on this program, when we tried to find out the sources of it, the initial speculation was that it was introduced internally by dissidents inside Iran, and then that came out that somehow it was smuggled onto the Siemens equipment in Germany before the equipment even went to Iran. Now, everybody's saying, well, it's a conspiracy between the United States and Israel to put the Stuxnet into the Iranian system, and of course neither Israel nor the United States is saying one way or the other whether they did. What's the truth in this? Where did that come from?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. I think that the smart money is on the fact that the U.S. and Israel did this, but if it was the dissidents in Iran and they figured that out, they're in big trouble, of course. But I think that I believe, and it's just my guess, that this was something that was done by a combination of the U.S. working in conjunction with Israel, and as you've indicated, nobody's going to admit to this, so we're just going to have to speculate on exactly what happened, and that's it. I know no more than that myself, you know.
Well, John, I want to get back to this summit that we've just had with Red China, and saying, "Gee whiz, you know, you're doing a lot of stuff. You're raiding our stuff. You're stealing our industrial secrets. We're worried you're going to get our defense plans and things like that. You guys, you bad guys, you gotta quit doing that." And China's turned around saying, "Wait a minute, the United States is the biggest defender going. You're the ones everybody's afraid of." Isn't it kind of true that there isn't going to be any? You know, we're going nowhere with this. We're going to have to be able to defend ourselves or scrap the internet altogether and rebuild it, which some people are suggesting that we do, and others are saying, well, that's the most insane thing in the world. You can't scrap it and rebuild it. So, you know, what is the answer? The United States apparently is going to continue to do espionage using cybersecurity and cyber warfare, I guess is the word I should be using, and we're going to continue to look for ways to making ourselves secure from people trying to put a Stuxnet into our system. What is the answer?
I know. I wish I I wish I had the silver bullet to tell you, but I don't. I just believe that this, what you're saying, is going to continue. I believe you're going to find that people are going to continue this business. The bad guys are always going to be with us. And this is going to be the fact that everything is going to move more and more to cyberspace sort of indicates to me that that we have no choice but to do this kind of thing. We're always going to be in this mode. Nobody's going to trust anybody else that they're not doing these kinds of things. And so the U.S. to protect itself is going to have to do these sort of things. And the other countries are going to feel the same way. And look at all of this business going on right now with this guy Snowden. See, I mean, that gives you an idea right now of the seriousness of this business and what he has created himself worldwide, that everybody in the world knows what is going on with this business right now.
Absolutely. And what you're saying then is it's the Wild West. It's going to remain the Wild West. There's nothing we can do with it, but we're all going to just have to be better gunslingers and better ways of protecting ourselves, and that's the only solution to the whole thing. And you mentioned Snowden. Yeah, and of course we had Manning with WikiLeaks, and many people believe Snowden is a patriot, because what he did is he alerted the United States citizens that we don't have any privacy. People can access anything that we're doing. And then there's the other question, too, of being on Facebook and other places. Since there's a very small degree of separation between things, if I'm on Facebook, I could know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who's the biggest drug dealer in Mexico or one of the marathon bombers. I mean, isn't it pretty dangerous with government gathering information and getting guilt by association? Do you see a problem there?
I think it's becoming a necessary evil. You see the people that are the leaders of the country are coming out and saying that, you know, gee whiz, we've got to do this sort of thing to protect ourselves. We just don't have any choice. And so I think that it's dangerous on the one hand to bury our heads in the sand and say this isn't going to happen when these other people are doing it as fast as they possibly can. It's just a tricky business. It's real hard. You don't want to give up your privacy. Nobody does. I certainly don't want to. I don't know anybody else that does. But on the other hand, you may have to give up a limited amount of it just to be safe. And one of the things that I always think about, and when I think about that kind of thing, I believe that if I'm not safe, nothing else matters. It doesn't make any difference what kind of house I live in or what kind of car I drive or this, that, and the other. If I have to worry about whether I'm going to be safe the day when I step out of my house, then none of this other stuff matters too much. So that's part of the problem, I think, is that we want to maintain our privacy, and we don't want government sticking their nose into our business and whatnot. And they've got, I think, going to have to find some kind of a happy medium here, because both sides have at least some degree of credibility in what they're saying. And it's just, they're going to have to reach a happy medium. I personally don't see any way around this business. I don't think the bad guys are going to go away. And as a result of that, I think we're going to have to protect ourselves. But it seems to me also that when it comes to collecting information, I don't understand why we don't try to concentrate our efforts on the people that we know to be in the bad guys and so forth. Why do you have to collect that on everybody? You know what I mean?
Well, David, there's a lot of controversy about that too. I mean, people say that if you're a terrorist, you got to think like a terrorist. So, what's a terrorist going to do? They're going to sneak somebody in that looks like a little old lady or a little old man or maybe a child or something else like that. And so, they're not going to make the terrorist look like a terrorist. So, you know, sure, they're going to look at everybody, and I think that's the plan. And I can't fault them for that. Anyway, I want to talk to you more about this in the second half hour. So we'll be right back. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Booker T. Washington. I've learned that success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life is by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed.